This dinner tonight is in honor of the Weaver Fellows. One of ISI's roles has been to serve as steward for the intellectual legacies of the principal thinkers of our movement. And in Richard Weaver's case, we've distributed literally thousands of copies of his books and sponsored countless summer schools and honors programs that concentrate in a serious way on his work. It's well known to many of you that Weaver was something of a patron saint at ISI, active as a faculty teacher at our programs, but also active as a board member in shaping our sensibility. And I guess Vic Milioni, Ed, you know this better than I do, but I think for Vic Milioni's probably the person he quoted most when he was teaching, mentoring people like Ed, was Richard Weaver. And so it was natural in 1964, 1 year after Weaver passed away, that Vic and the former head of the Earhart Foundation, Dick Ware, came up with the idea to establish a fellowship program from people who intended to teach at the college level. The idea was, this is expensive work, and therefore to get the return on the investment, that there should be an intention to teach at the college level for a career, for a lifetime, and then the investment is worth it. Now, because of the passage of the 13th Amendment, we cannot exactly hold the Weavers to this. But it happened over my objection, but in any event, the ones who've escaped college teaching have made their mark in public life, and we're proud of those too. So Vic was interested not just in honoring Richard Weaver, but also in the notion of Weaver as a model for the kind of person that we were looking for, someone of moral integrity with a broad and interdisciplinary interest in the world of affairs, with a commitment to pursuing truth and a passion for the great achievements of Western civilization and an understanding of how our own experience in America participates in those achievements. Vic and Dick Ware, therefore, established this system of encouragement for younger scholars who may not have been able to do it on their own, get a leg up in this whole question of getting the PhD and the professorship that can lead to college teaching. So in addition to about 1,000 recipients of ISI's other named fellowship programs, as Ed pointed out, there have been 560 Weaver Fellows, 17 of whom are here tonight by special invitation of Bill Campbell, who made an effort to honor you all tonight, and then not just for the sake of honoring the Weaver Fellows, but because of a sense that the society and the intellectual work the society represents has to be constantly renewed. And it is with the younger recipients of the fellowships, in the case of the Richard Weaver Fellows and so many of allied programs that our sister organizations sponsor, that's how that life is renewed. 500 Weaver Fellows doesn't sound like a huge number, but it's been happening since 1964. So there are tens of thousands of scholarly articles, thousands of books, hundreds of thousands of college students who've been taught, and as Stan Evans pointed out, too many millions of words as I was going through this litany earlier. So, but others have made contributions in public life. Ed Follner, who we've honored this evening, among the earliest, in fact, the first class of Weavers, has created the powerhouse we know as Heritage. Larry Arn did work at Claremont before taking the presidency of Hillsdale College. John Lehman, Secretary of the Navy, when we achieved 600 ships, remember those? They're down to 300 and change. So that was damned important. 600 ships, Secretary of the Navy, our president of the Philadelphia Society, Peter Schramm, Weaver Fellow before going on to head the Ashbrook Center. the leaders of Heritage, Cato, AEI, Discovery Institute, Goldwater Institute, Ashbrook Center, Halstein Center, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. I could go with a long list. But the Weaver Fellows have achieved that it's highly competitive, and therefore we can afford to exercise the kind of care that makes the fellowship highly predictive of people actually showing up and carrying on the fight. So thanks to all of you for being with us tonight. The central insight behind the Weaver Fellowships and the other ISI programs and our allied organizations is that the front line of the continuing struggle to preserve human freedom is not the Congress, it is not the White House, it is not Afghanistan. The front line in that battle is the battle for the minds of the new generation. We win if we form those minds, and if we don't, we lose. Our speaker tonight wrote a famous book about the early days of the conservative movement in the college field called Revolt on Campus. M. Stanton Evans has always understood that the battle to preserve the American ideal of ordered liberty is first and foremost a battle of ideas. The more visible, noisy fights in partisan politics are surface phenomena that are determined by those ideas. I think that is why Stan was attracted from the beginning to work with ISI as a charter member when he was an undergraduate at Yale. He's been central to ISI's work ever since, one of our most important authors and lecturers, but he's also been a trustee for longer than either one of us can remember when it started. He was for many years the editor of the Indianapolis News. He was a nationally syndicated columnist, radio and television commentator, author of numerous works, including the classic, The Theme is Freedom. And yet, with all those demanding accomplishments, he always made time to pitch in whenever he could to build the conservative movement, the conservative organizers of my generation. Looked at Stan as a role model of intellectual excellence, of integrity, and he worked side by side with us, building institutions, extending our hands to those who were coming on the scene. There's so many stories. The good news is tonight I have many friends here. The bad news is you've all heard my Stan Evans story. But I have one that I've been saving for 35 years. So bear with me. I'll set the scene a little bit, but Stan had been part of a conference at ISI earlier in the day. And I was the young program officer on duty, 1975. I took him to a restaurant. Unfortunately, I chose a French restaurant. And it was very fancy, and the maitre d' was very stuffy. That's all it took to set Stan off. I was so humiliated that day that it's taken me 35 years to be able to tell this story. It began with us entering this restaurant, La Coquette, which was beautiful with these wonderful damask tablecloths. And Stan says to the maitre d', "Seems like you've covered all our tables in cloth. Don't you have anything without cloth?" The maitre d' says, "Well, monsieur, we can seat you in the bar." And we walk in the bar, and there are these beautiful mahogany tables. He says, "Yeah, okay, but don't you have formica?" So the maitre d' knows he's in trouble. And then from there, the maitre d' says to Stan, "May I suggest we start with the Coquille Saint-Jacques?" And Stan says, "Well, you can suggest anything you want, but I'm going to have a burger." And the waiter says, "Well, we can make a hamburger for you, monsieur." He says, "How would you like it done?" Stan says, "Burn it, and I mean I want the particles of charcoal hanging in the air." And then the waiter says, "And for dessert, may I suggest the crepe Suzette?" Stan says, "I thought this was a nice place. Don't you have jello?" And the waiter trying to go with the flow, says, I can get you Jell-O, monsieur. Would you like lime Jell-O? Would you like cherry Jell-O? Stan says, I want red. Red Jell-O. I thought the ordeal was over as we were leaving. But Stan stopped by a table of these well-dressed people and says to them, watch out for them escargots. Turns out they're snails. Years, I never told the story in public. In response to Barry Goldwater's call to arms at the 1960 Republican convention, Bill Buckley convened an assemblage of conservative youth leaders at his family estate in Sharon, Connecticut. This was the start of Young Americans for Freedom, intended to be the political equivalent of ISI's own focus on ideas. And the ISI leadership was there, including M. Stanton Evans. But who would write the credo of this burgeoning and disparate youth movement, a credo that would unite the traditionalists, the libertarians, the anti-communists? There was an obvious answer, M. Stanton Evans. I've introduced Stan Evans as the founder of the National Journalism Center. I've introduced him as the president of the Educational Research Institute. I've introduced him as a newspaper man of distinction. I've introduced him as the author of such books as his magnum opus on McCarthy, just recently out. But tonight, I introduce Stan simply as the author of the Sharon Statement.